Hey everyone, welcome back to Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. My name is Rohan. This is Season 5, Episode 2 of the podcast. It's been a long time coming, I mean,
this is pretty much a reboot in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, we recorded Episode 1 like a few months back. We just posted it last week. The summer has been a mess, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
But hopefully, fingers crossed, we finally have our schedule down and we can start pumping out content weekly. I mean, I really missed this, and Nick, I think you did too.
I did too as well, I can say. However, I want to introduce somebody who's been very special. And due to me and Rohan's popular request, we decided to bring back a former co-host to permanently host Season 5. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Tej Patel, and I was here for Season 1 and Season 2. And due to a couple of reasons, I'm back to host Season 5. Let's go.
Yeah, but oh yeah, he had like, if you want to be more specific, he had a divorce and everything. So, I mean, only 17, but who's going to say anything about that? So today's episode is going to be something very interesting. It's something we kind of had a little bit of a hard time coming up with exactly how this would work. Probably the hardest in quite a while. So our scenario is going to be, what if the United States remained isolationist after World War II? And in order to clear up everything, we should first specifically state that isolationism, we're going to use it a little bit more loosely. I think the best way to define the United States, how we're going to be shifting it, would be more non-interventionist. So I think we should clear that up before we actually head on into the scenario.
Yeah, Nick, so you're definitely right. I mean, after the Second World War, I mean, the United States gets involved in everywhere, all in the name of really competing with the Soviet Union. I mean, we get involved in Korea, we dip our toes in Latin America, more than dip our toes in Latin America, for that matter. We dip our entire leg into Latin America. We basically prop up half of Western
Europe. Also the Middle East as well, should we add?
Yeah, oh yeah, the Middle East too, with oil and everything.
That also comes in during, after the Soviet Union fell, but it does also happen during the current time. I believe Lebanon's a pretty big example of that.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Throughout the Cold War,
I think America got involved everywhere in the world basically ever since.
Yeah, you name a country, more than likely one of the two superpowers funded some group there.
Yep.
Let's try to name
exception to that would might be Greenland when it became free, and even then, I know the U.S. had a base in Iceland, so I wouldn't be surprised if they had a base in Greenland as well.
Well, I mean, Greenland's been proposed to be bought so many times. It's kind of like,
yeah.
At this point, I think the United States should just buy out Greenland entirely. And I know it's just the Danish wanting to not sell it to them. But who cares what the Danish want? Just kidding to our Danish viewers out there. But in order to start the scenario, I know we were kind of got off on a little bit of a tangent. We decided to how do we say this? I know we've been talking about this guy a lot recently. And unfortunately, he was really the best case scenario in terms of how we can make the scenario work. In 1940, we would have a senator from Ohio win, Robert Taft. Yes, I know. We've been talking about him a lot. Hell, one of our most recent episodes was about an actual hypothetical presidency. However,
I mean,
this episode,
to be honest, like half of season 4 was of Robert Taft, so.
I mean, I don't remember the exact statistics on the amount of times we mentioned him in our episodes, but I think this will be our last one for a while mentioning him. But
guarantees.
I think to be honest though, we kind of were looking into who exactly could be the president to replace FDR. So basically, what's going to happen though is in 1940, FDR was actually debating not even coming back for a third term. But so in this scenario, we're just simply going to make it so FDR does not run for a third term. Instead, we don't know who to put up for the Democratic Party. I mean, we were first thinking John Ants Garner, but I think he's a little bit too conservative for the Democrats at the time period, especially because they just embraced FDR and the New Deal. And John Ants Garner was known for being a little bit more conservative. And we also can't use somebody like Truman because he wasn't really that prominent in terms of politics at the time period. He was just a mere senator. But I don't think that's important mainly as to who's going to be challenging Robert Taft, but we need Robert Taft to win in 1940. So avoiding all the domestic policy, we're going to talk mainly about foreign policy in this episode. So first, I think one of the few things to build up towards 1945 is that one of the more interventionist actions before World War II would happen, in the sense, could be this, or could it be described to be interventionist, would be the Lend-Lease Bill. So the Lend-Lease Act, obviously, of course, was pretty much America basically sending equipment over to Great Britain in exchange for future payment. And instead, we probably would probably not see something like that in our time period. It would probably be how we would describe it as a modified Lend-Lease Act as well. So this would basically just be authorizing loans to Britain. Britain buys it, buys stuff from the United States. And that's how he wanted the system to work. And he also wanted, we're talking about Robert Taft, because he did have an address around February of 1941 describing that his problem was not only just that, but it's also just the fact that he thought the president got too much power, and also the fact that it was just a blank check appropriation, similar to the Tonkin Resolution, the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, if I'm correct. Is that the name of it, Gulf of Tonkin Resolution?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, yes.
Yeah. Similar to the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution in 1964, as in there was an actual blank check appropriation, which we will be touching upon later on, because trust me, with a more non-interventionist America, Vietnam will not be happening. I think we could just say that right now. Okay, but let's get back onto it. So we're going to begin this point in 1945. So we have a second Taft presidency. We're going to have a second term for a Taft presidency. Now, one of the key proponents of internationalism, at least on the Republican wing, minus the Eastern establishment Republicans during this time period, would actually be a former Midwestern isolationist in Arthur Vandenberg. Arthur Vandenberg was probably one of the most important members to helping establish the United Nations, at least in the United States. I think we could agree on that.
So yeah, you definitely said Arthur Vandenberg was like a key figure of developing the UN, and he obviously died in 1951. But obviously, if Robert Taft was going to have his second term, Taft obviously hated the UN, and he will obviously reject the UN charter. And obviously, the UN could form without America, but I don't think Taft will allow America to be in the UN. Because obviously he's not very interventionist. He didn't want America to do justice internationally, do anything internationally related. In fact, he didn't like the Nuremberg trials at all. He thought America shouldn't even put trials for the Nazi dictators as a foreign country.
Well, I can clarify that position actually, because he did deliver that. Because I know what you're talking about, because we could just state it. So yes, he was against the Nuremberg trials. However, he was a Nazi sympathizer. His logic I know where you're getting at there, but I think it needs more clarification, because simply, just for clarification's sake, you're basically kind of just saying that he's a Nazi, and he was a Nazi sympathizer, which isn't the case at all. Basically, his logic, at least that he used in his speech October 5th of 1946 in Kenyon College, which is where he gave that speech you're referring to when he criticized the Nuremberg trials, he referred to the fact that it violated the principles of ex post facto. Basically, it's a principle in law where you can't be charged after the fact. Basically, it means after the fact in Latin. It means that you can't be charged after the fact, after the crime is committed, basically what ex post facto is that it basically means after the fact in Latin, and after the fact is kind of referring to if it wasn't illegal when it was committed, then you can't just simply arrest somebody for it. That was part of his reasoning for not supporting it, and I think the most famous quote from it is that. This, I'm going to paraphrase it, but basically he was saying this would be a blot on the American legal record, and almost as if it was a trial on a Russian trial, which is referring to the Russian way, the Soviet way of doing trials. But basically, that's basically his criticism towards Nuremberg. It's nothing with regarding the fact that he thought the men were evil. I mean, he also would say that he thought that they should, I don't think he also said it, but he also believed that they should be facing criminal charges, but he didn't think it was fair the fact that they were facing criminal charges for something that wasn't illegal at the time period. Now, this would be solved, obviously, by the Geneva Accords in 1947, declaring genocide to be an international an international crime. It's also convenient and interesting as well that he was pretty supportive of international courts that would supervise international law, referring to Robert Taft, of course. So, but yeah, I think that is a major thing you did mention, that America would not be involved in the Nuremberg trials and would not be involved in in the United Nations as well. As to that, who would be in charge of the United Nations then? I don't think the USSR would either, because if the United States is not on board with it, I don't think the Joseph Stalin USSR, which is heavily isolationist.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think, like, would the UN even form? Because, I mean, FDR was very adamant about this forming, just like how Wilson was forming the League of Nations, right? I don't even know if the UN would even form in this timeline.
You could have,
I don't think so.
You could have a weak UN, like a weak League of Nations after the World War One.
I don't know if there is even a League of Nations.
I don't think Taft really is going to push for some sort of global organization like FDR did.
No, not to that level. Maybe I could see it being, like I said, he was in favor of a WICA world court, basically, where it kind of governs international law. Like I was saying before, he was in favor of that during our time. So I think it would make sense for him to be in support of something like that.
I'm like some small organization that's basically its whole job is to enforce international law, and that's it.
You could say that's the UN right there if you want to. I mean, it might not be a small organization, but you could basically just say that's the UN right there enforcing international law.
I think if the UN formed during a Taft second presidency, it will act very differently, and how like the people that representing the UN would be probably different instead of like the system we have currently in the modern day that was developed all the way back from after World War II.
See, I don't think there is a UN to begin with. So I think that's probably one of the huge departures from this timeline is that I don't think there is a UN to begin with. Like I said, I think there will be like some world court system or world law system in the sense to where there are certain agreed upon principles, such as if Taft's going to be pushing that, for example, he would probably push for more. Like I said, one of his big criticisms would be at least establishing like American principles of law as the international standard. I think that would be something interesting to see. While, yes, maybe not all countries follow it, it's still the international standard for
these. It's like the standard for like international crimes, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we could define it as that. I can't really theorize something that I don't think has ever existed in our society without at least having serious amounts of time dedicated to actually thinking about it. What else as well?
Right.
I think then we should also talk about 1948 as well, because in 1948, it kind of decides where our country goes, because Taft's presidency would end like that, right? How did our country go then after that? Because we just had a non-interventionist, isolationist, whatever you want to say, president for the last 8 years that effectively changed the course of American society. I should also mention as well, the Marshall Plan will probably be passed in this scenario still, because it's still loans, which he was fine with. But it's still loans handed out to these European nations to rebuild, which he was fine with, from my research at least. Let's see. In terms of 1948, how would that go out?
Nick, for the 48 election, I can tell you right now, Dewey's not going to have a chance because the Republican Party is following Taft, I would say, and is going more towards that more non-interventionist, isolationist route, right? While Thomas Dewey is a big internationalist, so he's out of the picture right now. And I think, like you mentioned Vandenberg too, and he has a definitely good chance. Another candidate I was thinking of was John Bricker. He's a hardcore internationalist, big Taft ally, so he's another choice. He's from Ohio, and Vandenberg's from Michigan. I think, though, Vandenberg, even though John Bricker is Taft ally and is a hardcore isolationist, I think Vandenberg has more political connections and is more popular within the party. So I would say Vandenberg has a better chance.
See, I would think the opposite personally, because I mean, if Bricker is a Taft ally and the Taft Republicans are taking over, let's just say it's similar to how Goldwater would change the GOP, is kind of right. What I'm thinking here. Why would somebody like Vandenberg, I mean, he would be an isolationist in this scenario, maybe more in the lines of Taft, but we also take into account the fact that Vandenberg is old at this point as well. So he's about, say, actually, no, he could probably serve, realistically speaking.
He's about 64, 63-ish.
Yeah, no, I was going to say he could realistically serve, actually, because he was 1884 to 1944, 1950, like 1948. Let's just use TAF logic here. He was 64. Yeah. I don't think, I don't know if he could, I don't know. There is the potential that he could, if we're using, applying the logic. But I don't, but I honestly don't know. I think it is debatable if he could make it. But Bricker is definitely younger. I think also the fact that he is from Ohio as well could bring up a lot of more. Oh, maybe he is more.
Yeah, I can definitely see that argument as well.
I think also something to mention as well is that he would probably be more domestically conservative than Taft would be, actually. So I think if the Republicans wanted to make a safe bet, I would go with the isolationist Vandenberg in this scenario, probably. As much as I don't want to say it, because Vandenberg does die 3 years later. And it's not like any of this will change the fact that he dies 3 years later in office.
I mean, Bricker was more of an isolationist than Taft, right? So he may have been seen more.
Well, I mean, I can't distinctly say if he was more.
But I mean, he may have been viewed from his, like, obviously, like, his, like, the people he worked with, Taft included. He may have seen more, like, polarized on the isolationist view. So Vandenberg was definitely more of a safer option. Or you...
I don't know, because, I mean, we could write off a lot of the liberal Republicans, such as Dewey. I could definitely see as well Harold Stassen, who wasn't a liberal Republican. He was a progressive Republican from Minnesota. He would be written off. Those are two of the biggest challengers out. Okay, but... So 1948 as well. There's no Harry Truman. Who runs for the Democrats then?
That is a very good question. I think it's very hard to say because Truman.
It's not Truman.
No, I just want to say that Truman kind of like pioneer how like the few next Democratic candidates happened in the next like decade. So without
the fair deal. Basically, he's kind of just like, I mean, I would say that Truman, I think honestly is influenced by FDR. I'd say FDR really is that guy to influence a lot of them.
Definitely, I mean? But. Without Truman, obviously, and having a new Democratic figure, it kind of leaves a void for, like, all, like, the small... I don't know how to word it.
See, I... like, in my honest opinion, though, it would... Like, one of the people you might first think to come up would probably be Henry Wallace, who was a progressive, actually, in the original 1948 race. However, I don't think the Democrats would do that at all. Because I think that would be a political suicide. It really would be political suicide. Because I mean, I guess you can argue the fact that, oh, maybe the Republicans don't win the South. However, if you have a progressive like Henry Wallace, who's running the Democratic Party, I can almost certainly guarantee you that you would not see a progressive like Henry Wallace win the South. And probably would see a more prominent Dixiecrat campaign as well, if we're putting Henry Wallace up there, of course. But let's also look at the fact that I think a potential candidate that could come up. So, for example, S.S. Kefauver, who would be a House representative, but he would become more well known as time goes on as well. But he is a very interesting individual because he's actually a Southerner who's actually pro civil rights. So I think if we're gonna have a Southerner who also stands for civil rights. Or at least as a moderate regarding civil rights, at least, I think is the safer option to go with as well.
No, that makes sense. And I like how you bring up like the South being important to the Democrats, because I think that part is never going to change, because the South is always a big political piece that the Democrats will never, ever give up. So obviously Henry Wallace is never going to be a good candidate to keep the South under control, but I do think that Estes Kavar would be, even though, yeah, he's like a little bit pro civil rights, but so was, you know, like.
He's a little bit pro civil rights. He's not exactly for integration and everything like that, but he's more pro civil rights than the average Southerner, let's just say.
I think Estes Kefauver would be the best choice just because the South will probably like him. He's the best piece. If Truman's not going to be elected, Henry Wallace is obviously, and it's not really. Any other Democratic candidates? I mean, he's definitely maybe the best choice. He's obviously a lot of people don't know about him, but that's just because in our timeline, we had Truman, and we had and like other figures coming up, like Eisenhower.
Yeah, but I don't know how Eisenhower would be in this timeline.
No, I don't think Eisenhower will be influential in this timeline.
But he's still going to be influential, 100%.
No, he's going to
be influential. He's the general. Exactly. I don't know if he'll run for presidency.
Let me reword that. I think he will be influential as a general figure. I don't know if he will be.
I think he could potentially still run. I don't think he could. I think he could potentially still run, but it'd have to be in like 1952 when it's like the liberal Republicans last.
Yeah, I agree.
Dash
with that.
For it.
I can.
So now, I mean, I who wins that. In 1948? Let's just say, Gefauver, or who are we going for the Republicans again?
Vandenberg.
Okay, Vandenberg. So who would win in 1948? Then are we to say Vandenberg or Gefauver?
I would say Vandenberg personally, because I feel like the country at this point is definitely moving towards. Even though Gefauver is definitely much more of a conservative Democrat, like you guys were saying, I think he's a Southern Democrat. I think the country overall is a little more in the Republican Party right now, because after, you know, full 8 years of Taft, he brought them out of the war, right? I just think that the country is just going to stick with Vandenberg and stay out of everything, you know, be non-interventionist, not isolationist, but just don't get involved with things they don't need to get involved with.
So then let's clarify this question right now, because I mean, we're starting to run a little bit out of time, but I think this is a very important question. What happens with NATO? Yeah.
Oh, I don't think NATO. I mean, NATO really won't exist because, for example, like people say NATO is there to protect us from the Soviet Union, their aggression, right? That's why it was made.
See, that's actually
but if we look at the, well. If we look at the timings, right? The Warsaw Pact was created in response to NATO, and the Soviet Union.
Think about it like this as well. It's kind of like I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I think it's an observation I made. It's kind of almost like you're basically highlighting the exact point that actually our President Taft would say as well. It's kind of part because it was part of a meet the press interview. I think he had in 1950 or something like that, around that time period, early 50s, late 40s, where he discussed why he didn't exactly support NATO, or not exactly support NATO, but exactly support stationing troops in Europe in that regard, because basically along the lines of if they do not have the intention to attack, then why provoke them? That's basically the logic in which
I mean,
and that's what
it's
you're
kind
thinking.
Of. I mean, if you think it's kind of like a game of chicken, right?
Yeah, chicken.
I just think in this, I was just gonna say, I was thinking like if this timeline we're gonna barely or even get a UN, I don't think the thought of like NATO would even like exist or like.
I think would still be a thought.
I mean, there would still probably be a thought, but I think like. Under the Taft administration or like from the Republican Party, I don't think any Republican will support that because if they hardly disagree of the UN existence to be, I don't think the support of like NATO would be at like, you know, the support of like the NATO goals will exist. So I don't think NATO will like not exist at all under the Taft administration.
So I think we have some pretty huge effects to happen. I think, however, we should also go over ripple effects as well, which I think will be very important. So first, the Korean War. How do you think that'll turn out? Because I'm actually leaning more towards a communist victory. And my reasoning behind it is simply put that the UN was basically the main backing force behind why the South Koreans were even still alive at that point, for the most part, in combination, of course, with the Douglas MacArthur as well. We can't not give credit to MacArthur. But, I mean, I think, honestly, there's no way a communist victory would not happen. As much as it would probably hurt the not make the United States happy, I think a communist North Korea is – I'm not sorry,
yeah,
not communist North
Korea.
A communist Korea would be inevitable at that point.
The Soviets are, like, right there. I mean, and the Soviets, they're going to be so tempted to give them aid, and they will. And, you know, in the United States, meanwhile, I mean, we're not going to really – it's, like, across the world, it doesn't really affect us. It's some minor nation that's having a civil war. Try to determine its own destiny. Why should we try to force it one way, right? Let them do what they want to do.
I think that is. I think the problem with that logic as well, simply put, it's not a civil. It's not really a civil war, at least how the United States would define it, at least foreign policy wise. They would be defining it mainly as a conflict between communism and democracy. That's how they defined it throughout most of the Cold War, as a matter of fact. Communism versus capitalism, whatever. Communism versus democracy, doesn't matter how they defined it. It's basically around those lines specifically. But but basically, it's not a civil war to the United States. That would be kind of Vietnam, but it'd be considered an independent two independent territories fighting over each other, is how I best would describe it, at that point at least. You could say maybe it's a civil war, but they were under occupation since, I believe, 1910 by the Japanese.
Yeah, by the Japanese, I think, and then, by the Japanese.
Yep, and then in 1947, they became separate states, North Korea under Kim Il-sung, and then South Korea under Syngman Rhee, who South Korea, actually, funnily enough, was, during that time period, and for, I believe, the next decade or two, actually poured to North Korea as well.
Yep.
But I think one of the big ripple effects as well during this time period, we're going to talk foreign policy first, because I think there's also a little bit more domestic effect from the Republican Party as well. The foreign policy as well with Vietnam. Vietnam would just, I don't believe, happens at all.
I don't think Vietnam would happen at all. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think you could say the same, for example, with, let's see. Ooh. I mean, Vietnam for sure is not going to happen, but what are some of the major wars? Let's see. I mean, Desert Storm, for example. I think Desert Storm's, I don't know. Desert Storm, I feel like
it's different because that's not really involved with the Cold War at all. But I feel like,
I think that's the logic still applies.
I mean, that's 40 years. My only issue with predicting that far is that's 40 years of change. And in 40 years, culture can change a lot, despite of what the foundation was in the original in the 40s with Taft and his non-interventionist policies. 40 years, things can change.
I mean,
do you think?
I think with Desert Storm especially, the United States also had an interest because of U.S. oil companies involved with investments in Kuwait.
Yeah.
We had a direct involvement with there too.
Do you think we might have somewhat a Bay of Pigs or not at all? Because
no. Wouldn't even be formed. No plan. There is a potential.
Because
that,
Cuba will still be communist in this timeline.
Oh yeah.
Yes, that wouldn't change.
But I think the biggest thing with that, I don't think the Cuban missile, maybe the Bay of Pigs might happen, but the Cuban missile crisis won't happen because we won't be placing missiles in Turkey.
See,
we don't have an alliance with Turkey.
See,
with NATO.
Some ways, I think it's kind of, I mean, just because you were talking about it, I think it is kind of scary to think about a scenario like this, and you might be considering why. I think it's kind of scary to think of a scenario in which the United States wasn't as involved, and I mean, as much as people might not like to hear it, but the United States being involved might have saved quite a few countries from a worse path, in my opinion, at least internationally speaking, and perhaps maybe established a world peace from 1945 or almost consistent world peace from 1945 until now. I mean, don't get me wrong, kind of established some of the bad parts of United States foreign policy as well, such as the interventions in some areas, like in Vietnam, for example. But it also established some of the goods of American foreign policy as well. I mean, such as NATO, for example. NATO, for example, is, I think, still pretty prevalent to this day and has been proven to be somewhat successful. But as a deterrent, yes, exactly. I mean, you don't see Russia charging into any of the Baltic or, I don't know if Finland joined yet, but Finland is going to join pretty soon.
Poland. I think Poland's in NATO.
Poland's been in for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Not a long time, but they've been in for at least 20 years.
For a decent amount of time, I think. At least 20 years, if not more.
Yeah, about 20 years, let's just say, because it was maybe 2000. I'm just guesstimating here. But I think in some ways, I think this scenario was very hard for me, because I was saying in the beginning that this was a challenging topic to make, because it's kind of hard. I'm thinking, how exactly would this world be better in a scenario where America would be isolationist after the Second World War? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting to think, because there's so much we had to change at the beginning. Because I mean, the way the wheels were rolling, it was just going to go towards that interventionist policy. So we had to kind of change the direction of the wheels. And once we did it, and we see the ripple effects, I mean, it's vast, the changes.
Precisely. I mean, like I said, I'm generally not in favor of intervening in a lot of places. But I mean, just the whole internationalist policy after World War II, I think when you look at it like that, I think it's pretty prevalent as to how important it kind of was, especially in the formation of some things such as NATO, for example, as well. You could argue to UN in some circumstances, if you want to say that. I think as well, I think even some of the isolationists we were talking about in our scenario, such as the president, Taft, for example, even he would actually delegate in our actual history, he would delegate more foreign policy to the internationalists, such as Arthur Vandenberg, who in our scenario was an isolationist, but he was an internationalist in our actual one. He was very crucial to founding the UN and very important to getting that passed as well. So it was kind of hard visualizing it more so than anything. I think it's a very, I know we're repeating some of the stuff, but it's a very, I think it's a worse reality, honestly, if we didn't go with our plan after World War II, like we did with FDR's plan. Now, otherwise, that'll be this episode of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. We all hope you enjoy this new episode. It's kind of like a new reboot for us because we haven't done this in, what, a few months at this point. And we've kind of been brainstorming this episode for quite a bit, and I figured that this probably will be our last episode on like the 1940s for quite a bit, I think, because we've covered this quite extensively recently. I think it's time we move on and try some new topics, I think. So if you guys do want to suggest new topics, go to our Twitter at BackToThePastP1. Again, it's at BackToThePastP1. You can add us on a tweet, or even just respond to one of our posts and just say, hey, can you do this topic on alternate history? Trust me, if we like the idea, it will be featured in an episode. Otherwise, we hope you guys have a great day.